Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. This is our View of the Opposition show. As I talk to a supporter, blogger, or podcaster that covers Fulham's opposition for the upcoming match. In this episode, I'll be talking to Kevin DeVries, who is the host of the EPL Roundtable, and he happens to be a Tottenham Hotspur supporter. He is on to give us the opposition view of this match between Tottenham Hotspur and Fulham. We have much to discuss. Before I go on any further, I have to welcome my guest to the show. Kevin, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Thanks so much. Very glad to be on. I've heard you, of course, on the championship show for a couple of years now, and glad to be on myself now.
Well, it's great to have you on. Listen, I think it would be a great way to start by just telling us a little bit about the EPL Roundtable. You hosted it. It's a great show. Actually, you interviewed me a little while ago. Let's talk about the EPL Roundtable and how people can listen to it and follow it on Twitter.
Yeah, it's at EPL Roundtable on Twitter. It's EPL Roundtable on iTunes and all the other podcast places. It's about 6 years old now. Just learning how to talk and everything like that. but it's a good time, kind of like your show. We tend to have journalists and podcasters and bloggers for different clubs all come onto the same show and then talk about issues. So you get some really interesting perspectives where, say, a Manchester United fan would view a topic very differently than, say, Crystal Palace or Fulham, for example. So we like to start those conversations and just kind of see how they play out based on how different fans of different clubs see those issues.
Oh, it's a great show. I actually listened to the latest episode. I'd highly recommend all fans listen to the EPL Roundtable. I was part of the championship version, and it's good that potentially I can be part of the EPL Roundtable because yeah. I enjoy the championship version. All right, my friend, let's get into this because I want to get your thoughts on Tottenham. Let's start here. Let's talk about the transfer window where, unfortunately, Tottenham Hotspur made history. They did not sign a player. So let's talk about it. What went on here?
Yeah, well, as you say, first team since 2003 to not sign any player, and that's when the summer window was fully established. It was a very strange one because at the end of last season, Pochettino very brazenly said that Tottenham need to be brave this summer, and a whole lot of people read into that as kind of a plea to Levy for money to spend on new players, which it never was, and he was literally quoted in an interview as saying that's specifically not what he meant, but it still got the fans' hopes at the start. I think it's an important point to lay down before getting into the rest of it. Very soon after the transfer window opened, we extended several of our players, including literally doubling Harry Kane's wages, which very heavily broke our long-standing wage structure that we would never pay a player more than £100,000 a week. And so in my eyes, that's what the being brave was, is we were worried about losing Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen and the like. And so by breaking our wage structure, what it did was it ensured that we were able to keep our best players rather than going out and signing other people. Now, in theory, there should have been more money than that, but as I'm sure we'll address at some point, there's also been a stadium build going on, and that stadium cost spiked as soon as all of the Brexit stuff started happening.
Yep.
A lot of the steel prices and things went up, so a lot of money went into that. And it's football is not actually a video game. You can't just make a new pot of money. It's all the club's money. It all has to go to all these different things. So that's probably part of it. I have seen a lot of fans saying that this isn't that big a deal. They brought up Pochettino's recent press conference quotes or quotes from his book where he says he likes to have a smaller squad and that the better a squad gets, the harder it is to add to, which is no doubt true. But all 19 clubs are trying to get better, and all 19 did, save for us. And there's no way that Pochettino wanted zero players in this window either. So I think people are kind of missing the point there. What I found very interesting, especially in the back half of the window, is that all of a sudden all the rumors went away. Because Tottenham's transfer strategy is typically to contact all of our targets, and that leads to there being a lot of rumors about us.
Right.
Because we will have made contact, and then people play the telephone game. Tottenham made contact. Tottenham are in negotiations. Tottenham are talking to the club. Tottenham has signed. Like, all of those happen before those things are agreed. And what was really interesting is that they all died down in the back half of the window, save for Jack Grealish. And it really made it sound like we just missed on all of our targets, short of Jack Grealish, and then they got new owners, and then we weren't able to buy him. Small footnote on that, by the way. The people that think that we were just dumb to not sign Grealish before the new ownership partners came in, they wanted to not sell him while they were negotiating whether or not they were going to come in. Why would you sell your best? Why would you want your best asset to be gone before you show up and invest your money? So I think the people that thought that we were just stupid are kind of missing the point and making it a bit more basic than the situation really was. But the concern is that we were so slow and disinterested in players late in the window. We obviously had early interest in Martial. There was talk of a Martial for Toby Alderweireld split, which probably on deadline day, United and Tottenham fans both would have liked, just so that their clubs would have addressed something in the squad. But in the end, they didn't. And then now that we see all these stadium issues, where the stadium's been delayed, now we have to figure out if we're playing more games at Wembley. There's this Manchester City match that there's a non-zero chance that it may have to be vacated because we can't play at City Stadium, we can't play at Wembley, and we can't play at ours. So unless a third-party stadium opens up, there's not really a solution there. So if you have those issues, the fact that we didn't bring any transfers in, you really have to wonder what was happening at the high levels of Tottenham Hotspur this summer if none of these issues were able to be addressed.
That's fascinating. And I was just going to bring up to you, because I think a part of this is the stadium issue. That's where I was going to go. So I'm glad that you brought that up first and then also talked about signing your players. I think that's also important. So I think there's a combination too. I think that you did have targets, and for whatever reason, the Grealish thing never materialized. And listen, there was speculation with Sessegnon late. I saw some crazy speculation of potential deal with Sessegnon going one way and Rose coming another. Who knows?
Yeah.
But like you mentioned, there was some stuff going on out there, but I also think that behind the scenes, the stadium played a significant role in this.
Yeah, and we've seen this in the Premier League before.
Arsenal.
Specifically with rivals Arsenal, exactly. They had the same kind of situation. And I think Levy did a very good job of making sure we wouldn't have to deal with this. But then when the cost of the stadium inflated and the delivery time of it got elongated, I think we were just kind of at a disadvantage. And the fact that this is the first window to end before the season starts, which I think is a good idea if everyone's doing it, but not everyone is doing it, I think that threw a big wrench into it. The fact it was a World Cup year as well, so a lot of the targets were occupied playing in the World Cup, obviously slowed things. And you will see across the Premier League, this is the lowest amount that this is the first year that the Premier League has spent less in the transfer window than the previous year. Like, it's just empirically true that teams were struggling to bring in as many players as they have in past years, whether it be the deadline day change, whether it be the World Cup. It just wasn't as effective, and then Tottenham were the least effective in that new system.
Okay, very interesting situation going on at Tottenham Hotspur. All right, let's talk about your opener against Newcastle United. I watched a chunk of it, did not watch the entire match. Just want to get your overall view and what you learned about your club.
What we learned about is that if you put five starters into a team that haven't trained with that team in months, that then they struggle. That was really the main takeaway there. I think Dele Alli had a very good match, but not any better than he usually does for us. I just think he was sharper than a lot of the players that haven't really gotten going yet. Mixing in the players that played a lot in the preseason, like Sissoko and Lucas and Aurier, and then shoving them next to players that they haven't seen in months, I think proved to be a little bit difficult. There wasn't a lot of cohesion, specifically in the midfield. Yeah. A specific issue that is a little concerning is the whole point of buying Lucas Moura or any of the other many wing targets we were targeting last January was that we needed pace, width, and creativity. And one of the reasons that that position went so unaddressed for us for so long was it was hard to find somebody with all three.
Right.
And then when we finally isolated somebody, and they had to be better than our current players, because otherwise you're not really improving the squad.
Sure.
So we finally isolated one, and Lucas Moura, who was whatever the German word for Wunderkind is, spent obviously some time at PSG, won some trophies, didn't really gel there, though. But we take a chance on him. Obviously, high talent, high pace, has that creativity factor we were talking about. But the issue is he is drifting in centrally significantly. And with a team that already has Harry Kane, Dele Alli, and Christian Eriksen all trying to play in central areas, when Moura cuts in like that, it's just bringing more congestion into a space where all of our creative players are supposed to be. And we really need him to stay out wide. And I saw the heat map for Lucas after that match, and he was more central than Christian Eriksen.
Wow.
Which is a problem. We very much need him to stay out wide, especially in this match, which, of course, we'll get to later.
Sure.
But that was really concerning because Lucas had a very good preseason when he was really the biggest star that was on the tour. But seeing how he reintegrates when the bigger names and the players that have a bigger impact for us are back, seeing that he kind of adopted the style he had over the summer versus his traditional career profile was a little concerning because we don't need somebody cutting inside. We have that already. We need him to really hug the touchline and face things out a bit. Aside from that, I think Hugo Lloris had a good match in goal.
Yep.
And I think there were moments, you know, there were 10-minute stretches or moments here and there when our talent level just shone through, where, you know, a club like Tottenham just has more talented players than a club like Newcastle, and at times that was evident. But there were significant swaths of that match where Newcastle were playing more cohesive and a better brand of football. And we really need to tighten that up going forward, obviously. But in the end, it's match week one. We threw in a whole bunch of random players and we got 3 points away to Newcastle. So you'll absolutely take that and then just head on to the next one, which is what we're talking about.
Excellent. Before we move on, I want to go back just to talk about this a little bit more because I did watch a decent chunk of it and a couple things stood out for me. And you actually talked about both of them on the EPL roundtable with Jake, who is a Newcastle United supporter. A player that stood out for me for his side was Kennedy. And that actually gave me a little hope for this upcoming match, watching the way he really went through the Tottenham team at certain points during this match. But things seemed to change when one of my favorite players of all time for Fulham, Moussa Dembele, was inserted.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Dembele, really big fan. So let's talk about that because, again, maybe that plays itself out with this upcoming match, talking about Dembele coming in and how you would start. For the full match, we can talk about that in a little bit, but let's talk about the issue that you had with Kennedy and then, of course, Moussa Dembele coming in.
Yeah, I assume with Kennedy, your analogy would be Sessegnon coming off the left.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically what Kennedy was doing is he was just dribbling infield, constantly breaking through our line and just picking up a lot of nicks and niggles in the process from Tottenham players that were reacting a little late to how he was playing. It kind of reminded me actually of Dele Alli's first year at Tottenham, where like the rest of the team was set up very rigidly and then he was just the wild card and defenses didn't really know how to deal with it. And it did seem like that at times with Kennedy, the way he was dribbling it, and unlike Lucas, would decide whether to cut infield or out to the touchline. And I think it really lost a lot of the midfielders. The fact that Sissoko at times was trying to mark him was good for them. As you said, kind of the long-term fix was bringing on Moussa Dembele, who really just has such like a calming influence in central midfield. Because once he has the ball at his feet, there are very few players in the world that are going to get it off of him if he's just trying to hold on to it. His dribbling, obviously, is fantastic, and he himself can just shoulder off anybody trying to bother him. He's never been the greatest passer, as I'm sure you know, but he can always get himself into a space to make an easy pass.
Yes.
Which is certainly a talent in its own right. I think for us it would be crucial to start Moussa Dembele in this match if he's fit enough. Of course, that's the big issue. That's why we didn't know if he was staying or not. As he said with the Belgian press that he wanted to play in an easier league as he gets older because he's had a hip injury he's been dealing since almost the first year or second year we had him. It was a match against Manchester United. I don't remember what year that was, but he's been injured a lot, but if we can start him, and Poch will want to, because he notoriously loves playing players against clubs that they played for, I think that would be a huge influence for us in that central midfield, because the pairing of Sissoko and Dier in midfield would very much benefit you. And if Sessegnon is kind of playing that free role for Fulham, he could certainly cause issues for us as well.
Okay, excellent. So I wanted to bring that up. I'm glad that we talked a little bit about that, my friend. All right. Let's now talk about key players for you. Everyone knows the names, but as you mentioned, going into this match, you're dealing with players coming back. So who do you see as your key players going into this match against Fulham?
On form, you'd have to say Dele Alli, because he was the only one that really looked up to the races. But where I think the difference could really be made is if Pochettino talks to Lucas about this whole width issue. Because you have just gotten Brian in. He hasn't been at the club for a week. And throwing somebody with his kind of pace and guile at Brian, I think, could be really be a huge influence on our right wing, on your left. The big question mark is Harry Kane, who still does not look right. But your back line did not look super settled last week in the stretches that I saw.
They're all new.
Which was not the whole thing. Exactly. True or false, your back line is entirely new, right?
Correct. It's all new. Yeah. Cyrus Christie was with the club last season. I think he started one match, if I can remember correctly, but pretty much it's a new back four and goalkeeper. So you're dealing with players that really have not gelled yet together. So there is that little bit uncertainty. And I also want to mention, while we're talking about this, because this could affect what goes on in the match, we are recording this on Wednesday. Yeah. Joe Bryan went off in the second half. He actually went down twice. The second time he came off with, it looked like a potential ankle injury. So we're not sure of his status for this match. If he does not play, that could change a great deal with how Fulham's set up. So we'll see. But
who would be over there in theory?
In theory, what I think would happen, if that is the case, you would have Sessegnon go back to left back, and then you would have Kamara go over to the right and potentially Sherl over to the left. That's what I think would happen. I think that would be the domino effect. I hope Joe Bryan is okay, honestly, but we just don't know at this point as we're recording this on Wednesday. But that's, I guess you could say, something that we're going to have to watch as we get closer to the match. Maybe we'll learn from Slavisa Jokanović on Thursday. But like I mentioned, we're recording this Wednesday, so I'm not sure of that at this point. But
That would be a very interesting matchup change, because Sessegnon does have the pace and ability to probably keep up with Lucas a little bit better.
Yep.
But as you just said, he would still be lining up next to two center backs that he hasn't really played with.
Correct.
Which I guess is really my point, is I know Harry Kane hasn't been on form, and it would be deceitful to say that he has been near that really since before his most recent ankle injury, which he only returned to against Chelsea in February or March. Yep. But a player like him up against a new back line that don't have like an established line of communication, aren't used to their partner's tendencies, there will be gaps made.
Oh, sure.
And if there are, that will obviously lead to very dangerous opportunities for us.
Yes, and that's what concerns me, especially against a club like yours. And I'm actually looking forward to this, Kevin, and we'll talk about it as we get further and further into this preview. And this actually acts as the preview for Cottage Talk. You and I talking about the match, the view of the opposition this season, is the preview show for Cottage Talk. And what's interesting is that I see this as an opportunity for Fulham to really test themselves against a top-rated club that should have the ball much more than they do. They're used to having the ball. How will they react? How will the defense be able to step up after only playing together one time together? It's going to be very interesting, and it's a huge test. Seriously, I know how big of a test this is. All right, my friend, let's get into this a little bit more. Let's talk about your strengths and weaknesses of your team right now. Again, we're talking about the situation with players coming back, injured players. So where do you see the strengths and weaknesses right now?
The strengths are obviously in the creative side. Just having, I know Sun just left for the Asia games, but still having.
How much of a loss is he, by the way?
Well, it kind of depends, because depending on the formation we roll out, sometimes he's just not in that formation design. So there are some matches where it wouldn't matter at all. But in this kind of hybrid 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 we've been playing, he's very important out on the left. And it's worth noting that outside Nkudu, who it sounds like we're going to loan to Mainz either, well, probably the day you're listening to this, we do not have another naturally left-sided attacking player. Oftentimes what we'll do is we'll pseudo-play Christian Eriksen over there, play Dele Alli through the middle, and then a right winger, which I assume will be Lucas, but we also have Lamela out there. Losing Son removes the factor of having pace on both sides of the pitch. When we have Lucas on the right and Son on the left, obviously that creates a lot more dynamics in our attack, because then you can either do it creatively or just brute force with pace. When one of them is gone, it obviously detracts from that. Although putting Christian Eriksen on the left, obviously the benefit of that is it allows him to send in more crosses, and there are a few players in the Premier League more accurate. But it will have a significant impact. But we still have so much creativity, especially in that bank of the pitch, I think that's really our greatest strength. The defense typically is, and as we mentioned earlier, we're not really sure what lineup we're going to see. Okay. And if it is Serge Aurier, obviously, with great risk comes great reward and also great failure. With Serge Aurier, he could set up a game-winning goal, or he could concede a red card or a penalty that ensures that you lose. And those are just the dicey roll when you play him. Davinson Sanchez is phenomenally talented. He's far ahead in his development schedule from what the club originally expected, but he still has issues. For people that saw the Juventus match in the Champions League last year, two things became very evident. One, it's very easy for him to lose his man-one-man marking if they ever go off of his back shoulder. He just doesn't have that internal sense yet of where his man is behind him. So at times he'll just completely lose people. And also he's fairly easily turned. If somebody makes a quick move to his weak foot, it takes him a while to fully rotate and get there. Now his top end pace is very good, so oftentimes he can recover. But that initial burst sometimes can lose him as well. So typically I would have said the defense because, you know, we've had one of the best defenses in the Premier League for basically since Pochettino showed up. But we might not see that this weekend depending on the team selected.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right, before I get your thoughts on Fulham, I'm actually going to read some excerpts from Tony Gale's column. It's actually on the Fulham website. He does a very good job and always has some very interesting things to share. And here's some things he's sharing about Tottenham, and I want to get your thoughts on it as we go through our preview of this upcoming match. This is what Tony Gale had to share. Quote, "Tottenham away seems like a daunting next fixture, but in my opinion, if there's a time to play Spurs, it's now. They were far from convincing against Newcastle, and you could see that there's a little World Cup weariness in their legs because the majority of their starting 11 played in Russia this summer. I think there was a little bit of tiredness there in mind as well as in body. That said, we'll need to be a little bit tighter than we were last weekend and wary of the breakaway. What do you do without the ball is as important as what you do with the ball, particularly in the Premier League. I saw Spurs at Wembley quite a lot last season, and they did struggle in some of the matchups when they were big favorites. Their fans will be expecting them to beat Fulham, and sometimes that can mean they don't get behind them as much as they should." Okay, that finishes the quote. Your thoughts on what Tony Gale had to share? I think they're very interesting thoughts there. How about you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good points there. The fans do tend to get edgy, especially in the matches that we quote-unquote should win. I'm sure when they mentioned struggling against teams, West Brom and Swansea in particular at Wembley proved to be far more difficult affairs than we would have liked. And at times we do struggle to break down teams and set up to defend, but I am not under the impression that that's what we'll get from Fulham and Jurkanovic, as you typically do to try to at least play your football.
Right.
As for other points about playing us early, that is probably when you want to play us. You probably want to play us both early before all of our World Cup stars are reintegrated, before we know whether or not Toby Alderweireld and Danny Rose are staying at the club and the impact that they'll have. Obviously, they're fantastic players. And before we're at the new stadium. Who knows when that's going to be at the moment. But all of those things would make this fixture more difficult, and you are avoiding those issues. Harry Kane looking fit. And back up and running, obviously, another thing that you're avoiding. Although I suppose you could lump that into World Cup players not yet on form. Although, like I said earlier, I think that predated the World Cup, actually. I think this is, if you were going to play us this year, which you were going to twice, because that's just how the Premier League works, now is probably the time to do it. And at Wembley, a place that fans were ready to move on from already, a place that we've just found out we're going to be stuck at for at least another month, I do not think the crowd will be in a very good place heading into this one. Obviously, an early goal could change all of that.
Sure.
But the longer this match goes, either without a goal or if Fulham took the lead first, the longer people are going to get unsettled, and including the players. I think it will be much easier for us to hold on to a lead than it would be to try to chase one late based on the tiredness and the legs that you talked about.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. Let me now get your thoughts of Fulham heading into this match. I actually listened to the EPL roundtable, and you guys had an interesting discussion on how much money Fulham had spent. I know that they spent a huge amount of money, brought in a ton of players, especially several late. But what's interesting about this is just my opinion that each one of these players, there's a purpose behind it. And it's funny, the only thing that you could really look at and say, well, what are they doing, is bringing in two goalkeepers. But I think this is just my opinion that there's something going on with Marcus Bettinelli. I don't know what it is. It's just my opinion. I don't have any news behind that. I'm just thinking that they wouldn't be bringing in two goalkeepers if there wasn't something going on or thoughts with the club with Marcus. Maybe they're thinking about loaning him out. I don't know. But I think that they've made a decision to have two other goalkeepers. And I think, unfortunately, Marcus Bettinelli is the third man out. We'll see how that all plays out. That's how I think it's going to go. But I think all other moves that they made fit needs. So I know the price tag is huge, Kevin. And you guys had a long discussion on it. And it's going to take time for it to gel all together. But I see every move as part of the style of Jokanović. And it all seems to fit on paper what they're trying to do. So I'm not against them spending money. In fact, I look at it this way. Would you want them not to spend money and take the Cardiff City approach, which I think is going to be more difficult to stay in the league? Fulham, I think, are looking at it as they don't just want to stay in the league, Kevin. They want to compete in the league. Maybe that's being ambitious, but that is how the cons have been acting. So that's the way I look at it. But I want to get your thoughts on Fulham.
Yeah, I realized that I was being critical of the window, but I think that was more along the lines of trying to continue the momentum from last season, which oftentimes the teams that win the playoffs tend to have, because you basically signed a new 11. Whether or not they all take those roles and hold on to them remains to be seen, but this is almost an entirely new team of players that you've brought in. And I agree with you. I think on an individual basis, they're all good signings on the pitch. You can debate about price, but we're in such like a weird post-price place with transfers. There's not really much use getting into, well, they really should have spent 25 instead of 30. Like that it feels to me like that conversation is basically dead in football now. My main issue was you had a very good squad last year. You came up with it. Usually you want to capitalize on that momentum, and it seems like you're kind of truncating it. The fact that Sherla immediately stepped in, obviously, Mitrovic, and it's worth noting that Mitrovic was there already. Mitrovic is not part of this conversation of new people showing up. He already knows the system. As you and I have talked about on our show, and I've heard you talking on the championship before, there is a reverence between Mitrovic and Jokanović that tends to get the best out of him. So it's worth noting that he has already been there. They are all good signings. The question is just how long is it going to take for all these players to get used to their roles. And some of them already know each other, like the fact that Sarri and Le Marchand came over together from Nice, I think, helps. You actually have a fair few Spanish speakers coming in with Anglesa as well. My question is, where do they all go? Because, you know, Alfie Mawson and Callum Chambers, that's a new central midfield pair. You bring in Joe Ryan because you weren't able to get Matt Target back in after last season. Obviously, we've talked a lot about how Sessegnon isn't actually a left back. And then you bring in Sarri, who obviously goes into the midfield, Sherla, who obviously goes into the midfield. It's just a lot. And I agree with you that you want to show ambition. I just think that something may have been sacrificed in the instead of the tactical or the tangible, I just feel there may have been damage to something outside of that in this club by saying, congratulations, you were all fantastic. We finally made it to the Premier League. Here's your spot on the bench.
It's an interesting point. And the way that I'm looking at it, that Fulham have made some decisions after the season was over, Kevin. This is what's interesting talking to you about this, because we talked about this on Cottage Talk, is that they were looking for upgrades everywhere. And it's pretty obvious based on the transfer window that that's what they're doing. And there's an argument to be made on your side. Well, you have a settled side, just go with it. But then you have to ask yourself, are you just looking to survive, or are you looking to be in the Premier League for several years? And I think the cons took the approach that to stay in the league for a very long period of time, more than just this year, they needed an upgrade. And they needed to take a hard look at some of these players that got them through the championship to the Premier League, give them competition, and see who sticks and who's going to be the starter. And I think that's what they've done. I just think that they've given themselves competition in every position, which I think is good. I think that's healthy. And players that were already with us in the championship, they'll have their opportunity to stick, to be the starter. But now they have someone coming in that's going to challenge them. And that's the way I look at it. That's why I look at the transfer window, and I think it was a brilliant transfer window because I thought the Cons showed everyone that they're ambitious, that they don't just want to be dealing with a relegation battle. They want to be in the league for a long period of time. I thought this is a step in the right direction. But I understand where you're coming from on it.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, Cardiff didn't do a Premier League transfer window. They made sure that they're going to be good in the championship next season.
Yes.
Exactly. And you obviously didn't do that. And
Wolves didn't
work before the year. Of course they did. And when Watford came up, I had many of the same complaints. Watford basically just brought in, through their weird Spanish connections, just like 6 or 7 new players. They're like, this is our team now. And I was responding to that on the back of Tottenham having just done that when we spent the bail money. And we weren't able to get all those players bedded in. Of course, some of them suck, some of them didn't. And I guess what you're saying is you're just willing to take that gamble that the team will be more improved than damaged by making all these signings.
Over a period of time. It's funny because I've said this on Cottage Talk, and curious your thoughts on this. I thought it would be better for Fulham to start the season playing against Spurs and maybe follow that up with another top six team instead of playing Crystal Palace so early, because Crystal Palace is a team, let's be honest, and say 10 weeks time, that would be a team you're looking at. Okay, we need 3 points. It's the opener. It's a team that you should be able to get points from just by the style of play, even though they are an established Premier League team. That's a team you got to be looking at points. When you're playing a team like Spurs, you're thinking, oh, let's see what we can do.
Right.
So
I think it's a very good point. And I think a lot of people will be surprised by Crystal Palace throughout the year.
Because I think Crystal Palace are going to have a good season.
Bad season last year and finished 11th with a striker that couldn't finish, with a Premier League record of injuries. Like, the people that just assumed that they were going to be bottom half this year,
no way.
I think we're
I'm very
a
impressed
lot of
with Crystal
details.
Palace. I can back this up. After watching that match and seeing how Roy has built that team and knowing Roy Hodgson's history, obviously with Fulham and some of his other clubs, that team is, to me, has the potential to be top 10 because they're hard to beat. They basically get you to make mistakes. And once you make mistakes, as happened with Fulham, they're going to pounce. And that's a good part of how Fulham lost that match, is that one team was clinical, the other team wasn't. And then once they took advantage of their opportunities, they basically leaned on Fulham. And they just, again, opened themselves up to get that second goal. Once they killed the match off, that was it. And I agree with you. I think Crystal Palace are a team that's underrated, extremely underrated.
Yeah. So I think that looks like a worse loss than it was to start the year. I don't think people are aware of how good Palace can be this year.
Totally agree. All right, my friend, real quick, what Fulham players concern you from a Tottenham Hotspur perspective?
Well, I know it's like basically the S word at this point, but Sessegnon is the one that I think is the most interesting heading in.
Sure.
As we've talked about off air before, I had heard on the Tottenham side that Sessegnon was very close to joining Tottenham, and that if he hadn't gotten promoted, he most likely would have become a Tottenham player. And so I have to wonder on my side, A, the validity of all that, because we'll never know.
Sure.
He did get promoted, obviously. And B, how much is that weighing on him? I suppose C, does that have an impact? Is he going to try to prove himself against the club that we're interested in and didn't sign him? Is he resentful or angry and going to take it out on them and have like a phenomenal match? Does he even care anymore? Like, I just find this whole situation, it was so weird. And as you know, it's been going on for years.
Yes.
2 January's ago, we lost a formal offer.
It's been going on for a long time now.
Exactly. So whether or not that has an impact on the match remains to be seen. And then add on top of that the fact that it's most likely Aurier starts again. And as I mentioned earlier, he can be so up and down. A player like Sessegnon could really give him problems if he does start on the wing, although like we just said, he might not. But I think a lot of the Tottenham fan base will be really interested in Sessegnon.
Okay.
Now, to give you a less cliched answer, Mitrovic.
Yes.
Because Tottenham center backs, whether it be Toby and Jan or Davinson and Jan, they are not the huge brute force center backs that used to dominate football. They want to play on the ground. They want to shield you rather than tackling you. They do not want to deal with the physical presence for 90 minutes. And I think, I'm sure you heard on the show last week,
yes,
I think Newcastle missed an opportunity by not playing Rondon the whole match.
I heard you say
because
that.
You saw in the last 20 minutes or so, he really started causing problems because he'll make dummy runs to send Davinson the wrong way, which I mentioned is one of his weaknesses. He'll get his shoulder into the back of Vertonghen and really just make him aware, you know, I'm big and I'm strong. What are you going to do about it? And so I think a player like Mitrovic is exactly the player ID that causes issues for our defense. And I think that will probably be your best chance at a goal. And it might come from the penalty spot, admittedly, because Aurier tends to give away penalties. If Sissoko starts, who knows where he's going to give away the ball and create a one-on-one that Hugo has to deal with. But I think the narrative answer is Sessegnon and the tactical answer is Mitrovic.
Okay, and I'm glad that you mentioned Mitrovic. I was going to ask you about him because you talked about that, like you said, on the EPL roundtable. He's a player that concerns you, and you, as you just said, you mentioned Rondon, that maybe if he started, there would be a difference in that match. It's very interesting, so that's something to look for from a form perspective. All right, my friend, I like to do this. Let's go through the matchups. I've got several matchups here. I'm just going to say right off the bat, I think that I think it's pretty easy to say that Spurs should win all these matchups, but let's talk about them. Let's talk about Fulham's attack versus Spurs' defense. Now, you talked about Sessegnon, and you've also talked about Mitrovic. Do you still give the advantage when Fulham are attacking to Spurs, or do you give it to Fulham?
Well, a lot of these are going to get stipulated with depending on who plays, because as we've talked about a lot, we're not sure which World Cup players are going to be reintegrated. But if it's the same 11 as last week, I give the slight edge to Tottenham just on the fact that, first of all, you have to get through our midfield, which tends to be strong. Then you have to get through the back line, and then you have to get past Hugo Lloris. That's just a very difficult thing to deal with, as Premier League teams have learned over the past few years. As I've said, that does not eliminate the chance of a mistake, but I think over the 90 minutes, our defense will be more effective than your attack. But your attack only has to be effective once to score a goal.
Okay, very good. All right, let's now switch it. Spurs attack versus Fulham's defense. I'll just say absolutely. Spurs, your thoughts?
Yeah, it doesn't matter who plays. this is obviously a huge benefit to Tottenham, both on talent scale and on the unit scale, because as we've talked about, your back line, A, we don't know on Wednesday who it's going to be, which is obviously an issue. And regardless of who it is, they haven't played together. Yeah. So not only is the Tottenham attack, not only does it have more continuity, they're all more familiar with each other, but also the talent level is just levels higher. And so, yeah, obviously Tottenham definitely have the benefit there. But, you know, as we mentioned before, sometimes Tottenham struggle to break down teams. Wembley has proven a factor in the past, but on paper, Tottenham's attack is better than Fulham's defense, fairly empirically, I think.
Yeah, it's very hard for me to argue this one, but here's an interesting one, and I think this will also be a factor on Pochettino, what he decides to do in central midfield, and also what Slavisa Jokanovic does. Nguissa just started training with Fulham today. Yeah. Actually, we just saw our first picture, so this is going to be interesting because I would say it's going to be Kevin McDonald, but the fact that Nguissa started training, it's an interesting little situation going on here. So who has the advantage in central midfield? The midfield three for Fulham has always been a strength, but I know that's obviously a strength of what happens with Tottenham Hotspur. What are your thoughts about this battle here?
This is the most dependent on team selection on both sides, as you just said. Because if we roll out a midfield two of Sissoko and Dyer, it kind of doesn't matter who you're rolling through your midfield. You will have a fairly good day as long as you're passing. You don't want to get physical with Sissoko and Dyer. They are both big boys, I believe is the technical term. But it is easy to pass through them. They both make mistakes when they themselves are passing, which creates good counterattacking opportunities, which you kind of referenced earlier. If it is Sissoko and Dyer, without knowing Fulham's midfield, I think I might still give the edge to Fulham. Obviously, if Dembele and Wanyama magically recover and are thrown into the first 11, there's not many better central midfields than that in the Premier League, let alone Fulham. But that, as of yet, Dembele and Wanyama yet to feature this season. Dembele with the long-running health issues, Wanyama with more current ones. But there's every chance that it will be Fulham controlling the central midfield, because despite how effective Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen are, they're both now almost exclusively attacking players. When they're playing in a defensive mindset, it isn't defensively. They're pressing your back line, which really removes them from the central midfield area. They aren't near the center circle for the majority of the match. So there's every chance that Fulham would take this on the day.
Okay, very interesting. I'll just share this with you, Kevin. My co-host, Emilio Donnell, said this, and this is very high praise I'm about to say, and I'm be curious your thoughts after the match on Seri. He said that Seri made the best debut he's ever seen of a Fulham player, ever, which I find fascinating that Emilio made that kind of stance there on Seri. That just tells you the high praise that he gave to this player. That's a player to watch for Fulham.
Yeah, he was amazing at Nice, and a year ago, every top six club made inquiries about him.
Exactly. Exactly.
He is, you can see, not no scrub.
No, you can definitely see why even a club like Barcelona were looking into him. You can definitely see it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the final matchup, and then we'll go to predictions. This is an interesting one because I like both managers a great deal. I really respect Pochettino, and I obviously respect Savisa, but Savisa, this is his second time now coaching, second match in the Premier League. So who has the coaching advantage here?
Yeah, it's hard to say where Tottenham and Pochettino rank top five in the league. But Pochettino is one of the top five in terms of the best managers in the Premier League. And as you said, Ivanovic, we haven't really seen much of. Obviously, one of the best managers in the Championship last season, hence the promotion. But really yet to see where he falls on the Premier League hierarchy. The one thing I will say on the Pochettino side, I'm obviously less familiar with Fulham because I'm the opposition view. Pochettino's one issue, and what's interesting is he has a glaring issue every year and intends to correct them. But his glaring issue last year was response to opposing team substitutions and tactical changes. Basically, the three cups that we got knocked out of, this happened. West Ham in the Carabao Cup, Manchester United in the FA Cup, Juventus in the Champions League, all three of which we were leading at one point. And then the other side made a tactical adjustment, and we either didn't respond with personnel or tactics in time, which is why another reason why I mentioned earlier, I think if we get out to a lead, we might be able to coast through, but you could push us back, and we would kind of struggle. I don't know what Jokanovic's biggest weaknesses are, and I assume that Pochettino's game planning and in-game management are better, but you know, we'll see. We just don't know where to put Jokanovic on that list of 20 right now. But if he'd have to be top five to beat out Pochettino.
Listen, this is what I will tell you in advance of the match, Kevin, about Slavica. He wants his team to play possession football. Let's just say it. This is a huge task for him because I'm curious to see if he's going to make adjustments playing against a team that should have the ball more than his team. But we'll see what happens in central midfield based on what you said. Who knows? But that's what he does. He wants his team to dominate the ball. That's what they did in the championship. They actually did it for a good portion of the first half against Crystal Palace. And you know, and again, they had 67% of possession. So that tells you that's what he wants to do. But what happens when they don't have the ball? And that's going to be the test. And that's what I'm waiting to see. Against Spurs. That's why I think this is a very good time to take a look at Fulham playing Spurs because this is a team that I want to see how they react to. I saw them in preseason play against Lyon, and the score doesn't really justify exactly. Again, it's a preseason match. Fulham were on the back foot a good amount and had to defend, and I thought did a decent job and actually looked like they could counter a little bit. That was encouraging because that goes to this match coming up against a team like Spurs, against a team like Liverpool, Man City. How are they going to react? This is a test, and that's why I want to see what Savisa has in plan. Is he just going to go with his normal plan A and just have us just attack? We shall see, and that's what makes this coaching matchup interesting. Obviously, the advantage goes to Pochettino. I just want to see how Savisa is going to handle everything, and it should be fun. All right, let's now go to predictions. Let's do it this way. Before I get your prediction, I want to get your thoughts. What do Spurs need to do to win this match?
Spurs need to be consistent for 90 minutes because we, like England, randomly have 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off and allow the other teams to get back into the match, reestablish tempo and momentum. And that can really be the undoing of us. So I think if we prioritize playing B-plus football for 90 minutes, it will be better than this A to D stuff that we're currently doing.
Okay. Very good. Okay. I'm going to word this a little bit differently. about form. I'm going to put you in the shoes of Slavisa Jokanovic. I've done this many times. I think I even did it to Jake once and probably didn't like it. Mm-hmm. So if you are Slavisa Jokanovic, what would be your strategy against Tottenham Hotspur at Wembley?
Quick passing to central midfield. Maybe press with your front three just to make the back line have to think a little bit, because like I said, Davinson and Serge Aurier both have mistakes in them at times. So if you have a front line that's pressing up against them, especially Mitrovic, who we mentioned earlier, Sessegnon, who at times has played as a defender, might be a little more useful in that kind of pressing situation. But you don't want to press from the midfield. This is the difference between City and Liverpool, and why we tend to get the better of Liverpool and not City, is Liverpool press with everyone, which vacates the midfield, which gives right. loads of space to our creative players. City only press with their front three, which hurries you, but the midfield is still covered. So I would recommend doing that. Like I said, quick passing through the midfield, just, you know, basic tactic stuff, but just making lots of many triangles and making sure that there's always a pass available and that you're yep. completing them. Because if you don't, we can obviously launch, like we said, but the fact that Dier and Sissoko are both prone to making errors, as long as you just hassle that central midfield, you'll be in the match. So I really focus on that. Maybe an attack, focus on the wings, specifically that session on Aurier thing I talked about earlier. Yep. It might not work out. Aurier has the pace and strength to deal with Sessegnon all day long. The question is, does he have the concentration to deal with him all day long? I'd pass quickly through central midfield, try to get it to Sessegnon to create some. Schürrle is the kind of player that we don't really struggle dealing with. But if you focus on that left wing side, cutting into Mitrovic, who's probably going to be bullying the back line, maybe if he targets aiming, like I said before, aiming his runs behind Davinson, there tends to be space there, as we saw with the goal for Newcastle last week. I quick passing, Sessegnon, Mitrovic, and then, like I said, press with your front three, but not everyone.
Right, and it's funny because while you were saying this, the first thought that came to my mind, it really is, it starts with, obviously, the midfield three trying to get control of the ball and trying to pass it, like you mentioned, but then it goes to Mitro. And don't be afraid to get the ball to Mitrovic and see if he can take advantage of your center backs. And because,
yeah.
listen, even against Crystal Palace, at times I thought Mitrovic got off three good opportunities and also one header off of a corner. So basically four opportunities he had. He needs to be clinical, but Hennessy actually stood up very well in that match, made a difference. Yeah. And obviously you have Lloris, who's a very good goalkeeper. But mm-hmm. I think
World Cup winning goalkeeper.
What?
World Cup winning goalkeeper.
That's right. Exactly. So for Fulham to get anything from this match, they're going to need a goal, and I look at Mitrovic, and we'll see what happens. All right, we're both going to give our predictions. Let's start with you. What's your prediction?
My prediction is, I'm sure whatever guest comes on and says, to be both magnanimous but still support their team, and say 2-1.
2-1, okay. So you're going 2-1. I'm not predicting a Fulham victory. Sorry, I can't do that. So I'm actually going to predict the same thing. I'm going to go 2-1, and maybe I'm being ambitious by saying 2-1 because there's a part of me that thinks that maybe it's going to be 3-1. But I think that there's a goal in Fulham, and I want to see if they can step up defensively and limit you to, say, two goals. So I would, you know, again, 2-1. Tottenham Hotspur, maybe I'm being generous here, but that's what I'm going to go. I'm going to match you and say 2-1. All right,
yep.
Kevin, thank you so much for doing this with me. I really appreciate it. Before we go, once again, tell everyone how that they can find the show, the EPL Roundtable, and also follow you on Twitter.
You can find the show again at EPL Roundtable on Twitter. You can find EPL Roundtable on iTunes and Acast and all that jazz. I personally am Kevin DeVries at Kevros. I write for Goal and Omnisport. If you're interested in the fantasy stuff, check out Goal. If you're interested in live text commentaries and stuff like that, go over to Omnisport. That's where you can find me and the show.
Okay, excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing this with me, Kevin. I've enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed this conversation we had.
Yeah, of course I have. Like I said, I knew you guys were doing this for a while, and I was glad I could finally be on.
Well, it's great to have you on. But it is time to wrap this up. For my guest, Kevin DeVries, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.